This week's guest has his eyes on the horizon running New Hampshire's largest airport. We talked to the head of Manchester-Boston Regional Airport about what it takes to keep this economic driver flying high. I'm Matt Maury, co-publisher and executive editor of Business NH Magazine and Granite Media Group.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan, co-publisher of Business NH Magazine and chief creative officer for Granite Media Group. And welcome to BizCast NH.
So, Christine, I know you and I have been very excited because unbeknownst to each other, we have separately planned vacations to Florida on the same week.
On the same week, pretty much in the same location. Yes.
And yet somehow we have managed to make it so that we will avoid each other so you don't have to put up
Our
with me during
won't
that
cross.
Week. But we're both flying there.
Yes.
So, on our today's guest, I thought we'd talk a bit about flying. I grew up in an Air Force family.
Mm-hmm.
So from the moment I was, very young, I was very used to flying on airplanes and I loved it, especially as a kid. I mean, you're going someplace new and my kids love this too. Like they are, I think, as excited about the air flight as they are about our destination. They're
yeah.
like, so you mean I get to sit down and ignore you for like a couple hours, I have unfettered access to snacks.
A screen.
People are going to be delivering sodas to me. I have screen time. They're like, woohoo, bring it on.
Yeah.
But, there's always, that yin and yang of it, as an adult, you're like, oh my gosh, you're having to deal with the crowds and going through security and, am I getting there enough time in the parking and all that. It's, it can be nerve-wracking,
mm-hmm.
which is why having smaller regional airports that lessen that stress is so nice to have close by.
Yeah. So unlike you, I didn't fly actually until I was 16, was the first time I flew on a plane. And just to, dive right into the deep end, my first flight was to Paris. So it wasn't
go big
a
or
short
go home.
Couple-hour flight. And I say that, it was a high school trip. but my first time on a plane was a seven-hour flight to Paris. So I got introduced to flying real fast. but for me, I love the experience of going to the airport because to me, I know it's because I'm going somewhere
mm-hmm.
probably for a vacation. So for me, it's, I'm checking my luggage and I'm on a plane. I really enjoy it. The takeoff and landing specifically, I don't love so much just because I get motion sick. But if I pick the right seat, I can do okay.
I have a weird little quirk on takeoff. you all have those stupid superstitions on
obviously.
Certain things. When you're like, if I do this certain thing, my sports team will win. For me, it's, I can't believe I'm admitting this. I have to have the theme song from Peter Pan in my head. You can fly, you can fly, you can fly.
Okay, I was going to say, my superstition isn't as fun, but I have to touch the outside of the plane when I'm going through the door. That's my superstition, is I have to touch it before I go in the plane.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So let's get beyond our own little weird quirks and talk
yes.
to someone who's an expert about flying and airports. We'll dive into it with him.
Yes. Today's guest is Ted Kitchens, the airport director at Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. Ted oversees an approximately $1 billion economic engine that includes commercial aviation development, cargo, general aviation, concessions, rental cars, and property development. After serving as a consultant in airport planning and development, Ted moved into managing airports by joining Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport in their Planning and Development Bureau and has progressively moved into senior leadership and executive roles. Before joining Manchester-Boston Regional Airport, Ted served as the general manager for George Bush Intercontinental Airport, the nation's 15th busiest airport. He oversaw operations, security, maintenance, capital development, and the administration of a $150 million annual operating budget. Ted successfully led that airport through flooding that occurred due to Hurricane Harvey, the worst natural disaster in U.S. history. Ted holds a bachelor's degree in sociology from the University of Central Florida and a master's degree in urban and regional planning from the University of Florida. He is an accredited airport executive from AAAE. having received his accreditation in 2010. In his spare time, he enjoys photography, golf, and cooking on his big green egg. Ted, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, we're going to get to that big green egg soon enough, but...
I hope you do.
You know, I want to start with, you know, there's certain jobs that once you start thinking about, you're like, how do you start on that? So you were in consultancy to airports and then went into airport management. How do you even start in that path and what made you want to go down that path?
Well, you know, being a consultant, you know, you can only carry an idea or a project, you know, so far, and then you kind of have to leave the room while they make a decision as to whether or not a project goes forward. And I found a bit of frustration, I guess, in not knowing how that decision was made. And so, you know, and plus my wife and I were thinking about starting a family, and yep. Being in the consulting world, you know, you kind of ride the ups and downs of the industry. And if there's anything about the aviation industry, it's a turbulent industry. There's never really been a period of prolonged, you know, stability at all. So, you know, I think it was a combination of that frustration and plus, you know, starting a family. And we said, hey, I've always wanted to go on the other side of the table and be a part of those conversations. And taking a project and seeing it through to, you know, a final recommendation and then seeing it built. And so, you know, about that time, you know, we were, you know, expecting my oldest daughter now. And, you know, just kind of looked in on a project or actually a job posting board for AAAE, which is the American Association of Airport Executives. And there were some openings there in Atlanta, and I looked at my wife. She said, hey, if you want to do it, go for it. I support you, and here I am. 20 years later. Right, exactly.
So what drew you into the world of airports to begin with, and how do you jump into being a consultant for them?
Yeah, so I like you. You know, what both you and Christine mentioned and, you know, in your intro, that's what we call the magic of flight. Right, it's not so magical sometimes, but it's right. The magic of flight. It's going somewhere new. It's new horizons. It's meeting new cultures or trying new foods, seeing new places. So I grew up with that too. I was fortunate. My father was a professor of medicine at the University of Florida, and you know, whenever he would go on a speaking, you know, tour, he would take, you know, me along for a trip or my brother along for a trip every summer, and we were also blessed to be able to have a few sabbaticals overseas. One down in Montevideo, Uruguay, when I was 8 years old. I spent a whole summer down in Uruguay, and then again when I was about 12, we went over to Berlin, and actually I was able to go through into East Berlin, you know, before the fall of the wall. And just seeing that and how much richness that brought to my life, I always wanted to be in aviation. I always loved it. I love the takeoff. I love the landing because it's physics in its purest form. And so I just found a great love for it and I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to be a pilot, actually. Wanted to be an Air Force pilot. But when I realized that, you know, my eyes were not good enough, you know, to allow me to be a pilot, that's when they had the 20/20 unaided vision requirement.
Right.
You know, I just decided to you know, pivot a little bit, and I loved city planning. That's how I got into urban planning and how cities, you know, developed, and obviously airports played a big role in that. Before that, it was the trains, and before that, it was, the horse and buggy or ships. So, you know, transportation has always had a key role in the development of the cities that we live in.
So what brought you to the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport, and how long have you been with that organization?
That's a great question. Part of my consulting experience was up in Burlington, Vermont. I worked at that airport, did some airport master planning for them, as well as, you know, a few general aviation airports throughout, you know, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And so I just fell in love with New England. And this was obviously, you know, before my wife and I set out to have a family. And I told her whenever we have a family, we need to, if there's an opportunity for us to get into New England, I think we owe it to ourselves to explore that opportunity. And so the opportunity opened up for this role, and I put my name in the hat, and I was hired in October of 2018. So little over 5 years, but none of those have been normal.
Hasn't been any. Yeah, there's no. Something that happened in between that time. That
just a little thing.
Well, I guess let's start with, before we get into the pandemic and meeting those challenges, let's just talk about the airport in general. You know, a lot of people take airports for granted. It's just the place I go, I fly out of, I fly into. But it is akin to a small city within the city. Can you talk about what there is to manage at an airport and the number of personnel it takes to make that happen?
Yeah, so we have a really dedicated, highly professional team of 69 people that manage that airport. Now, there's about a little over 2,000 people that work at the airport that are with the airlines, with the TSA, the concessionaires, but on my payroll is about 69 employees. And that ranges from, you know, the professional skills of, you know, you got certified public accountants, you have human resources, I've got attorneys that deal with all of our leases and agreements with the airlines, but also with private development that's occurring at the airport. And then, you know, front line, we have all the trades that you can think of. We've got electricians, we got plumbers, we got carpenters. We have people that are keeping the lights on the runway. Those are our responsibility. So think of the cables that are pulling the electricity to light that runway up. That's all us. We have people that remove all the snow, mow all the grass. You know, it is a village of highly dedicated and trained professionals that I think. If people really knew how much pride they had in that airport, they would be extremely blessed and proud of what we do and what we can accomplish.
How many people work at the airport?
It's a little over 2,000.
Wow. And can you give us an idea of like a number of passengers that are coming in and out that airport, the amount of cargo that's coming in and out? What kind of economic driver is the airport?
Sure. We're about $1 billion in total economic impact. We just launched an update to that airport economic impact study, and we should have those numbers sometime in late summer, early fall, because we're losing a lot of economic impact because of people that are choosing to fly out of Boston, mm-hmm. right? And that economic impact, because all of our decisions have economic impacts, right? I mean, think about when you're going to any airport, you're paying for parking. You're buying a hamburger or some sort of food at the concessions. You're boarding an aircraft. All those have economic impacts associated with it, right? The employee that works at the parking garage or the employees that work in the concessions, the airline employees. So there's enough of that demand leaving to go to Boston that we're actually probably losing, I would hazard a guess, of about $1 billion. And additional economic impact that's going to another state. And we don't see any tax revenues associated with that at all. That goes to the Commonwealth.
Can you talk a little bit about that that challenge that you have with those other sort of local airports like Boston or Portland? Because there may be a time where, just economically for the average passenger, it does feel it's more affordable to fly out of Boston. So what is the airport doing to either promote itself for why you should be flying out of Manchester? What are your thoughts around that?
Sure. And, that's the challenge that regional airports do have. The more seats that are in the market, the more the seats that the airlines put into the market, even a market like Boston, that forces competition, which means airlines lower fares. That's how they compete. So, if all that demand is going in, all that capacity is being added into Boston, it means Providence and Manchester's fares are going up because there's only a certain amount of seats that a metro area can support. So what we're trying to do is attract a different type of carrier into the market that we've never had. Manchester, when I got here, we were the only airport in New England that did not have what's termed an ultra low cost carrier like Frontier, Spirit, Avelo, Breeze, mm-hmm. Allegiant. Those are the ultra low cost carriers. We had three global high fare carriers in Delta, United, and American, and Southwest, which is a low-cost carrier, but it's not an ultra-low-cost carrier.
Right.
And so we've been trying to attract those ultra-low-cost carriers to try to tilt the the fare differential, as we call it, back into our favor, because that's where it was back in 2005 when we had 2 million passengers. And to answer your earlier question, we're about 700,000 enplanements right now, about 1.5 million total. We had 2.2 at the highest, about 4.4 million. So we're about one-third the size of what we were back in the heyday. So we've done that by attracting some of those ultra low cost carriers, and now we are cheaper than Boston. It's just the popular perception is that we're not, and that's just due to the fact that Boston still has a lot of seats available at a certain price. We don't have as many seats available at that price. We being the airport, but really it's the airline's decision as to how they price it. So you know, I always like to say to people, you know, you can find that fare that works for you, but you just got to book a little bit earlier than you would normally book. So I generally say 6 to 8 weeks out is a good time for people to find a low fare out of Manchester, because you can find it.
That's a good tip.
And how does it work with negotiating with airlines and attract? What does it take in this very competitive field to attract an airline to want to use your airport as a hub?
It's a very long road. Most people, I think it's like Burger King, where you can just have it your way. hold the tomatoes and see you next month, JetBlue. No, it doesn't work that way. It is a very long process. I kind of liken it to playing four-dimensional chess. We have things that we can control. Our costs that we charge the airlines, that's been a big focus of mine, is to lower that cost, to try to make us more competitive, give the airlines an economic reason to choose Manchester to serve. So there's that element. But a lot of the other three dimensions we have no control over. That's the airline strategy, it's the competitor strategy, then there's the geopolitics, things like the pandemic or oil prices, because you know the Middle East or OPEC decides to make a decision that changes the price of jet fuel. Those are all things that are completely outside of our control, but certainly do impact, you know, airline economics and the ability for an airline to make money or not make money out of any market, not just Manchester.
So let's talk about the pandemic. So you come in 2018 to help lead Manchester Boston Regional Airport and, you know, to help it move forward because it was facing a lot of pressures, like a lot of regional airports. I mean, it's just an industry that there's a lot of competition on, and there's a lot of pressures on them. But it still has continued to be a huge economic engine. As someone who's covered economics here in the economy here for 24 years, you know, there's a lot of businesses when you talk to them about why they move here. The airport is among those top reasons and the proximity to it. But then the pandemic hits, and yes, we all shut down, but airlines got hit really hard. I don't have to tell you that. And then it was not just a matter of reopening, but regaining trust, you know, and saying, yeah, you know, we've been told, you know, keep social distancing, and now we're going to ask you to go into a tube that you're sharing air and right next to each other, but come on. At the same time, people were so isolated for so long, there was this pent-up demand for travel. What was that confluence and the effect that had on the airport, and what did that do to the momentum that you were trying to carry forward at the time?
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, the momentum, you know, was going strong. Like I said, I joined in October of 18. I immediately increased the level and the frequency of us meeting with airlines. That was something we weren't doing before I got here. And to kind of go back to your earlier question, what does it take to get an airline? First thing you have to do is be there,
right?
And you know, be present, right? And have a conversation with them, and build that conversation over time, and build trust and rapport. These are not easy decisions for an airline to make. You know, they're investing tens of millions of dollars in operating costs to choose your airport over somebody else's airport,
sure,
right? So there's an opportunity cost there that they're very keen to look into. So we were building that trust, and then the world took a left turn.
Right.
And we were really going really good with Spirit right before the pandemic. And I remember sitting there thinking, when do I reach out to them? Because I've built a good relationship. I've built the rapport with their network planning team. But they're constantly, I mean, it was, if you don't remember, a very maybe you weren't, you know, attuned to it as much as I was, but they were constantly rebuilding the airline practically every day based on the guidance that was coming out from CDC and what variant was coming out. So they were constantly rebuilding the airline, rebuilding the network, you know, practically every day for 3 or 4 months. And I don't want to be the squeaky wheel, right? Because how you doing? When are you coming to Manchester? No, that's not, right. That's not really the way you lean into that conversation. So I finally sent a message out to them probably 3 months after the pandemic hit. It was when the summer traffic started coming out, to your point, people were really wanting to get out. And we saw that quick return of some of the traffic in the June, July, August timeframe. So I think I reached out to him. It was 3 months after the pandemic, so it was probably, you're looking at late June. And it was crickets, and it's usually they would get back to me instantly, but it was just crickets. I was like, oh, great, I just screwed it up, right? what do we do here? But then they reached back out and said, yeah, we were just talking about Manchester. Love to have a market update and kind of what you're seeing up there in Manchester. So I knew that they were still there. So how did it all kind of come about, with passengers coming back? I mean, obviously we had to do it in a very, responsible way. I mean, we put down stickers, throughout our checkpoint. We were out there measuring how many people we could have into our queue at any one time. We put the 6-foot stickers out. But one of the things that we did very early on is we got what's called GBAC certified, and GBAC was a Global Biorisk Advisory Council. We were the only, I think, the 15th airport in the United States, actually on the globe, to get that certification at that time. The only airport in New England to get that certification, and that was really an in-depth audit by, biohazard engineers that are coming in looking at your air conditioning systems and looking at your cleaning protocols and practices and training, the commitment of the management to providing, clean facilities. And so we got that GBAC certified, and we put stickers all throughout the airport at every door that we were GBAC certified facility, so people could have that trust that they were entering a facility that cared for the public health and that we had the right protocols and training in place.
The airport, obviously, over the years has made a lot of different investments, in Clingdon, there was the huge project to put in the corridor off the highway. Can you talk about what have been some of the recent investments the airport's been making and what might be in the horizon? What are the things you're considering to make the airport more competitive?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously containing our costs, keeping those costs down. Obviously, inflation is battling us. It's battling all of our personal finances, but also our businesses and our operating income. So we're trying to keep our costs competitive. We're looking at restructuring, continuing to restructure some of our debt to help really keep our airline costs favorable. Our capital development needs are not building new capacity because we have enough parking capacity, terminal capacity, and airfield capacity with our runways and taxiways. Most of what we're doing now is rebuilding that capacity and just maintaining that capacity going forward. So a big project we had last year was the reconstruction of our main runway, asphalt pavement. Just like a road outside, it has a finite amount of life. And for that FAA, it's about 20 years. And it was time for that runway to get reconstructed. So we did that last summer. And we got another runway to do in probably 2-3 years. Which is the runway that kind of comes over Brown Avenue, and then on the other end it goes out over South Willow there in the wetlands. That runway has to get reconstructed in a few years. You'll see some taxiway work probably coming up, not this year, but next construction season. I'm giving my team a little bit of a break because rebuilding a runway in one summer, they were a little stretched thin and they were a little angry at me. But we got through that project.
Do you then have to divert everything to the other runway while you're working on one? So yep. That's going to be a challenge to just arrange all those schedules.
Absolutely, it was. And particularly with some of the airlines that, like Amazon, right? I mean, we're able to recruit Amazon to come in to the Manchester airport, and they have midnight flights. And there was a time where those two runways, where they intersect, how do you touch that piece of pavement that's common between the two runways. And that was a very tricky part of the project that took a lot of coordination, you know, with all of our airlines, but particularly with Amazon because of their tight shipping windows that they have.
How many airlines fly out of the airport? What are the different?
Yeah, so we now have seven of 13. So, you know, I like to tell people that we have a majority of airlines, and air service development really is business development for airports. So think about, you know, any business, you know, you may have thousands and thousands and thousands of potential clients to go after. I've got 13 and I've got seven of them. Right? So I'm doing pretty good.
Is that cargo and passenger?
No, that's all passenger.
All passenger. Okay.
So we have Southwest, American, United, which are our longstanding carriers. Again, United and American can get you anywhere around the globe. Southwest can get you anywhere around the hemisphere. And then we have the four ultra low cost carriers. So Spirit, Avelo, Breeze, which is our new entrant coming in June, and then Sun Country, which is a new entrant coming in August.
Oh, wow.
Oh, great.
Yep.
So a lot of choices coming up even more so.
Absolutely.
When people are deciding, you know, where they're going to fly out of, there's a lot of things that go into that decision that are out of the hands of the airport, right? You know, it depends on the price. It depends on their preference of airline, you know, where the destination is. So what do passengers want out of an airline that the or out of the flying experience that an airport can control? What are some things that trends you're seeing that airports can use to their advantage to tip things to their advantage?
Sure. So one of the things that when I first got here in October of 18, I had a serendipitous meeting with President Dean at UNH. We were up at a leadership conference, and no matter what stop in my career, I've always tried to partner with the institutions of higher education. When I was at George Bush in Houston, I partnered with the University of Houston and with Rice. When I was in Atlanta, I partnered with Emory and with Georgia Tech. You know, because they have very really smart kids, and they're really eager for projects. So I mentioned this to President Dean. He said, hey, let's talk. So we generated a partnership with the Survey Center. And one of the things that we were lacking was a full understanding as to who our customer was, but more importantly, who our customer was not and why were they not our customer. So we developed a series of survey waves that are still going on today. They were quarterly, and we turned them into monthly surveys during the pandemic and for the year, maybe 2 years after the pandemic. But now we're back to quarterly. And one of the things that we ask them is, you know, if you haven't flown Manchester Boston Regional Airport in the last year, what would it take for you to earn your business? And there's a series of options, and then of course there's always the open-ended option. But throughout all those survey ways, even during the depth of the pandemic, number one, number two, number three was lower fares, more airlines, more choices, or more destinations. Mm-hmm. Now they may have flipped in order, but it was always those three. So that's what the consumer wants. And so we've done that with bringing in these ultra low cost carriers. Our fares now are cheaper to about 27 of the top 50 destinations that our trade area wants to fly to. Manchester Boston Regional Airport has a cheaper fare than Boston. And that's because now American and United and Southwest, like I said earlier, have to lower their fares to compete for that customer. Because of that ultra low cost carrier is now in the market. Before, they weren't. So, you know, Delta, American, United, and Southwest, just they could price whatever they wanted to price. They didn't have that competition that they had to be concerned of.
And so it's the airlines themselves that are determining the prices at each airport?
Yes. Yep. And it's really the airlines view each city, each flight as its own market. Of course, prices in a free market is supply and demand, right? So supply is fixed because there's only a certain number of seats on that flight at that time to that destination. So as demand fills up, the airlines will start increasing the price. And that's why there's a perception that Boston has cheaper flights because they have more of those seats before they reach that point where the airlines start increasing their fares, whereas we've reached that point a lot sooner as a market because we have fewer seats to choose from, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely.
Now we've gone into classical economics. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, actually, to kind of turn things a little bit. So give us a little bit of a rundown of kind of what your typical day is like as an airport director. I don't know, there's probably not a typical day.
Yeah, I pretty much get my coffee and that's about it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that's the same, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly. No, it's a lot of it is managing the team and trying to stay out of their way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that's the challenge of all leaders is you have I have a great team, great senior management team, and I set the vision, I set the course, and then I try to stay out of their way and let them execute. So that's a challenge for me because I'm a hands-on person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's constantly reminding myself to allow the team to do the work. But then for me, I lead with strategy. I'm a Clifton's Strength Finders guy. I love that that analysis tool. And six of my top 10 strengths come from the strategic family of strengths. So I'm always thinking about the strategy, what the airlines are trying to. I'm trying to piece together the airline strategy, what other airports are doing, and how can we? I'm always in search for that edge, as I call it. Mm-hmm. What is the edge that we can use to sell the airlines as to why Manchester is a good fit and why we fit into their overall corporate strategy? So I'm always in the data, deep into the data, trying to find that competitive edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine the stress sometimes that comes with the job, the level of that. So when you're not managing an entire airport, how do you decompress? I understand you enjoy cooking.
Yes, I do. My last name is Kitchens.
So you live up to it?
I live up to it, and I do I do like to eat as well. So
well, they go hand in hand.
They do.
So what do you like to cook?
So I love my Big Green Egg, like we said in the intro, and so I love to smoke food. So I do smoked chicken, I do smoked salmon, I do a 3 or 4 barbecue pork butts every year that the family and we eat on that in the next 3 or 4 days. But I just love experimenting with new sauces and new ways of dressing things up, particularly when I do a steak and on the Big Green Egg, I'm always trying to come up with the perfect Bernay sauce or the Merlot sauce, so I'm always tinkering with things. Like I said, I'm always looking for the edge, right, in the data. So I'm trying to find the edge, trying to always find the perfect smoke. And I don't think you can ever find the perfect smoke.
That's okay to practice on, though.
Absolutely, it is. So I like to get away and do that. And then, as I said in the intro, or as you read in the intro, it's golf, it's photography. I like getting outside. A lot of my photography is of landscapes. I don't do a lot of portraiture or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm out there trying to find a good photo, particularly in the fall time. I think fall up here is just amazing.
And as you look to the future, what's the big, hairy, audacious goal for the airport?
And
what are the steps you're taking to get there? What lies ahead for this
well,
airport?
That's a great question. And, for me, I would love to get back to, let me rephrase that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great question. So for me, I like to think of Manchester no different than some other airports that we consider our doppelgangers to be, like Providence, Colorado Springs to Denver, Eugene, Oregon to Portland, Oregon. Milwaukee to Chicago, those are all markets that are within the same distance, and I measure distance in time, not miles.
Which I think a lot of us up here in New England do.
I think so, right, because you can't get there from here, right?
That's it.
those airports all lie within the same amount of time from larger airports, but they don't exhibit the same behavior that we do. So Providence leaks only about 50% of its demand to Boston. Colorado Springs is about 40%. Eugene's about 30%. We're at 82%. So for me, it's the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal is to get that 82 to 50. And on a per passenger or per day total of passengers, that's probably about another 2,000 passengers. I'm losing about 6,000 passengers a day to Boston. right? And I do about 2,000 as an airport. So I could be three times bigger if we got that down to zero, but that's never going to happen. But we shouldn't be any different than Providence, right? Because Boston provides the same competitive advantages to the fine citizens of Providence as it does to the fine citizens here of Manchester. It's the same airport. It's Boston, right?
Yeah.
Same flights, same airlines, same destinations. We're controlling for a lot of things here, but we're completely different than the residents in Providence. I mean, one of our newest destinations is Greenville, South Carolina, 80 miles from Charlotte, which is one of the biggest hubs for American. You can go to I have 400 daily flights out of Charlotte. Okay. Boston does not have 400 daily flights on American. It doesn't have 400 daily flights probably for all carriers combined. But Greenville only leaks 40% of its demand to Charlotte. And it's an easy drive from Greenville to Charlotte. So I think it's getting the community to shift the thinking away from the airport as a matter of convenience to a matter of importance. I'm not going to support the airport just because it's convenient for me now. I want to support the airport because it's important to the health of the state. It's important to the economic development of the city, which all keeps, in the final analysis, you know, to make it completely, you know, parochial, it helps keep your taxes low, mm-hmm. right? Because the more taxes, the more economic development we have, the more tax revenue we're generating, which means cities can do more. More of that revenue is coming back down to the towns, and less is coming out of your taxes. So I think it's making that change and getting us at least back to 1.2 million employments. If I can get there, I'll be very happy.
Well, it's been fascinating to talk about the intricacies of the airport and where it's at. We obviously wish you well with that. It's an important hub, economic engine for the state and for Manchester, as we've discussed. Lots of private development that's going on around the airport as well, in addition to all the cargo that comes through.
Hey, we haven't touched about the cargo.
Yeah. Right. And before, I guess, we wrap up, can you touch on that?
Yeah.
Because I don't think people realize just how much cargo is coming through the airport.
Yeah, so last year we had a record year of 234 million pounds of cargo on FedEx, UPS, and Amazon coming through the airport. And we're the third largest commercial cargo airport in New England behind Boston and Hartford. That 234 million is more than all other airports other than Boston and Hartford combined. So we play a pivotal role in ensuring, you know, that product is coming into New England, that we're keeping a connection to the global economy. And I think going back to an earlier question about COVID, that's how we kind of leaned into cargo during COVID, realizing that, you know, there's going to be a lot of PPE shipments that were going to be coming in, but also just the importance of cargo just in general. Boston didn't have that, because Boston really has spent a long time moving cargo out of Logan into the regional airports. And so for us, we're trying to keep a very diversified set of revenue streams. Commercial, cargo, corporate aviation, those all move at different business cycles. And I think if you oversubscribe to one, then you're putting yourself at risk as an airport. So we're trying to keep all those things in balance.
Well, Ted, thank you so much. It's been great speaking with you today. Ted Kitchens is the airport director at the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed the stories and information you heard on today's podcast, find more by subscribing to Business NH Magazine or visiting businessnhmagazine.com. I'm Matt Mowry.
And I'm Christine Kerrigan. BizCast NH is a production of Granite Media Group.